This is BBC Radio 4 FM, and now, Book at Bedtime. Having discovered a dead man's body on the beach at Feathering, local resident Carol Seddon has done her civic duty and called in the police. But the police are a little suspicious of her story, as a vital piece of evidence, namely the corpse itself, appears to have gone missing. Joanna Tope reads Episode 2 of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett.
Carol Seddon felt upset after the police's departure. They had come to the house with an agenda. Their semaphore of little nods and eyelid flickers had been prearranged. Having arrived, believing her to be an hysterical attention seeker, nothing she could say was going to make them leave with any change in their attitude. That's what hurt, that they'd thought her anything less than sensible. There was no doubt that she had seen the body on the beach. Maybe the police had taken too long, arriving after the tide had come in far enough to move the body on. Maybe someone had moved it deliberately. Her thoughts were interrupted when the doorbell rang. She answered it, and was surprised to find herself confronted by a thin, haunted-looking woman she had never seen before.
"Did you find a body on the beach this morning?"
Now Carol knew why she had let the woman in. Something in her eyes had indicated that her visit was serious.
"What makes you think I did?" "I know you did."
The voice was uneducated South Coast, not from the more discriminating purlieus of Feathering.
"It was a woman with a beige raincoat and a Labrador. You fit the description."
"Whose description?"
"Look, I know it was you, so we can cut out the bullshit."
Carol Seddon appraised the woman in front of her. The face had about it a deadness, the texture and colour of papier-mâché. The hair was flat and dull like tobacco. Only the eyes were alive, burning with a desperate energy.
"The police have been to see me this morning," said Carol evenly. "According to them, when they looked, there was no body on the beach." "I'm not interested in the police. You and I know there was a body on the beach this morning, down at the end of the breakwater."
"Were you watching me?" asked Carol.
"Was it you who I saw walking away from the body?" "I didn't go on the beach this morning."
The woman dismissed these irrelevant details and hurried on to what really concerned her.
"Did you take something from the body? Something out of his jacket pocket?"
"No, I certainly didn't. I didn't touch it."
"Are you sure?"
"Of course I'm sure."
"There was no knife."
"Knife? I didn't see any knife." This answer seemed to provide a moment of reassurance. Eventually the woman asked,
"Do you know where it went?"
"The body? I've no idea."
"And after you've seen it, did you see anyone else go near it?"
"No. As I've told you, I went straight home and rang the police."
"'Cause if you're lying, and I find out you snitched to anyone about what you've seen, there'll be trouble."
There was a new sly menace in the woman's voice, and as she spoke, she reached inside her quilted anorak and pulled out a gun. Carol was too affronted to feel any fear.
"Put that thing away," she ordered. "What on earth do you think you're doing? This is Feathering, not Miami Beach."
The woman waved the gun threateningly.
"So, tell me what you did see."
"I didn't see anything other than what I told you about." The gun was still pointing straight at her, and a new dangerous focus had come into the woman's eyes when the front doorbell rang. The woman hissed,
"Don't answer it."
"But everyone knows I'm here. If I don't answer it, they'll get suspicious and call the police." The barrel wavered while the woman weighed this up. Then she relented.
"See who it is. Don't invite them in, though."
Carol went to open the front door. In the cone of light spreading from the overhead lamp stood Jude. Her blonde hair was covered by a floppy hat, and she appeared to be wearing some kind of poncho.
"Carol, hi. I wondered whether you'd fancy going down to the Crown and Anchor for a drink."
Before Carol had time to reply, there was the clatter of a door behind her. Carol rushed back to find her sitting room empty. The sound of the back door slamming shut drew her through to the kitchen. That, too, was empty.
From his position at the foot of the Arga, Gulliver looked up blearily. A real help he was. She moved to the window and peered into the darkness. There was no sign of the woman, but the gate at the end of the garden flapped open. Carol turned back to see Jude framed in the kitchen doorway. "So what about a drink?" Jude asked casually. To her surprise, Carol found her lips forming the words, "Yes, yes, what a good idea." Carol hadn't been in the Crown and Anchor since the new management took over nearly 3 years ago. Ted Crisp had arrived with a reputation, and since his arrival in the village, it had been amplified by local gossip. Every now and then, he was said to go on major benders, and reports of his behaviour towards women were also exchanged in hushed voices. Jude, however, was undeterred. "I'll get these," she said, gesturing Carol to a table and bustling up to the bar. "How are you, then, young Jude?" Ted Crisp asked, with what Carol categorised as a lecherous leer. "Oh, not so bad, Ted. 2 white wines, please."
"Large ones?"
"Oh, yes." As Jude waited, Carol heard a roar of raucous laughter from the bar. Ted Crisp had just made a joke which seemed to amuse both Jude and the man slumped on a barstool beside her. His grey hair was thinning, and the way he attacked his large scotch suggested it wasn't his first of the evening. Now she could see his half-turned face. Carol knew who the man was. Rory Turnbull, dentist with a practice in Brighton, lived with a sour-faced wife in one of those huge houses on the Shorelands estate.
"Don't waste time with the eating," he was saying. "Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die."
There was a change of tone in his last words, as if he was suddenly aware of their meaning. Jude came back from the bar, cradling the 2 large glasses of wine and 2 packets of crisps. Carol took a long swallow of wine.
"Oh, you look as if you could do with that," said Jude. "I mean, you look like you've had a bit of a shock."
"Well, yes, I suppose I have," Carol found herself saying. Jude didn't ask any question. She offered no prompt. And yet, Carol found herself ineluctably drawn to further revelation. "The fact is," she said. And it all came out. The body, the interview with the police, the woman who'd arrived on her doorstep earlier that evening, the gun. At last, Jude spoke. "You say the woman looked as if she was on drugs. I should think drugs are behind the whole thing."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, there's a long tradition of smuggling on the South Coast, and once it was brandy, silks and tobacco. Now it's cannabis, cocaine and heroin."
Carol smiled.
"You seem to know a lot about the subject."
Suddenly, the pub door clattered open, making both the women look up. The newcomer was a short man of about 70. The dark blue reefer jacket and neat corduroy cap bestowed a deliberately naval air. A wispy white beard on the point of his chin gave his head the shape of some root vegetable newly plucked from the soil.
"Evening, mine host," he said as he strode towards the bar.
Carol recognised Bill Chilcott, another high street resident.
"Evening, Bill."
Ted Crisp reached for the pump handle. "Your customary half?"
"Yes, thank you. And my customary half hour away from the little woman."
"Huh."
He chuckled and then turned to the other man at the bar.
"Rory, how are you doing? I hear there'll be more break-ins at the yacht club."
"Have there?"
Rory Turnbull looked shocked.
"Who'd you hear that from?" asked Ted. "The Vice Commodore." "That old idiot."
Bill Chilcott's tuba face turned purple with anger.
"No, it was something Sandra heard on the grapevine, from one of her regular swimming group at the leisure centre. If you want my opinion..."
But on this occasion, the Crown and Anchor was spared another of Bill Chilcott's opinions. Rory Turnbull's stool had clattered against the counter as he rose to leave.
"Better be off," he announced brusquely. "Back to the lovely Barbara, eh?"
said Ted Crisp.
"Yes, back to the lovely Barbara," the dentist echoed in a doom-laden voice.
Carol looked down at their empty wine glasses.
"Oh, think we need another of those," declared Jude, rising to her feet.
"No, I'll get them," Carol said, a little late, following Jude to the bar.
The outer door clattered shut behind Rory Turnbull.
"'Wouldn't like to be his first appointment in the morning,' Ted Crisp observed.
"'Why? What's he do?' asked Jude.
"'Dentist. But if you take my advice, go for one with a steady hand,' Ted Crisp chuckled.
"'Oh, sorry, Bill. I should have introduced you. You know Carol, don't you? Well, this is Jude, who's just moved into the High Street, too. Two more large white wines, is it, ladies?'
"'Yes,' replied Jude. And Carol didn't even feel the slightest instinct to ask for a small one.
"'Rory Turnbull,' Jude mused. "'And you said his wife's name's Barbara?'
"'That's right,' said Bill Chilcott. "'Why, do you know her?'
"'No, just that I had a card through the letterbox yesterday from a Barbara Turnbull, asking me to go to some coffee morning tomorrow as a new resident of Feathering. Something to do with All Saints.'
"'Well,' said Bill, "'you'll have the pleasure of meeting my wife Sandra there, too. "'She'll be going after a swim.'
"'Oh, good.'
"'Barbara Turnbull's very active in the church locally. "'She and her mother Winnie, very devout.'
"'That's probably what drives old Rory in here,' said Ted. "'Needs to swill out the odour of sanctity with a few large ones.'
"'As they settled back at the table with their refilled glasses... Carol realised she'd been given a good cue to find out more about her neighbour. She asked, "'Are you religious?'
Jude let out a warm chuckle. "'Depends what you mean by religious.'
"'Well, church-going.' The chuckle expanded into laughter.
"'Good heavens, no!'
Having elicited one small piece of information, Carol pressed her advantage. "'I don't know anything about you, actually, Jude.' She managed to say the name with only a vestigial hint of quotation marks around it. "'Are you married?'
"'Not at the moment.
What about you?' "'Have been. Divorced.' Carol still had a slight pang when she said the word. It wasn't that she regretted the loss of her married status, or that she wished David was still around, very much the opposite. She knew she was much better off without him. But being divorced still seemed to her to carry an overtone of failure.
"'How long ago?' asked Jude.
"'Ooh, 10 years now.
No, 12. How time flies.
"'Any children?'
"'One son, Stephen. He's nearly 30. I don't see a lot of him. What about you?'
Jude looked at her watch, seeming not to hear the question.
"'I'm really starving,' she said. "'I've got to order something to eat. Are you sure you're not going to?'
"'Well,' said Carol. They both ended up ordering fish and chips. By then, Bill Chilcott, having made his customary half a bitter last exactly his customary half an hour, had left the pub with a hearty, "'Cheerio, mine host!' The two women's conversation for the rest of the evening moved away from their personal details. Jude was intrigued by the two dramatic events of the day and kept returning to the body on the beach and the woman with the gun, offering ever new conjectures to explain them. Carol's recollections of the end of the evening were a little hazy. Of course, it wasn't just the alcohol. It was her shocked emotional state that had made her exceptionally susceptible to its effects. She comforted herself with this thought as she slipped into stupefied sleep. The other thought in her mind was a recollection of something her new neighbour had said. Carol couldn't remember the exact words, but she felt sure that Jude had suggested their working together. If the police weren't going to show any interest in doing it, then the two of them should find out who killed the body on the beach.
And Joanna Tope reads episode 3 of Simon Brett's mystery thriller tomorrow evening at 10:45, when Carol realises that normal life won't be resuming any time soon. The Body on the Beach is produced in Edinburgh by David Jackson Young.